Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations, the podcast where curiosity meets connection. Thanks for joining as we discuss captivating stories and ideas and engage in thought-provoking conversations with experts, enthusiasts, and everyday people. We hope to ignite a curious spirit as we embark on a quest for understanding one curious conversation at a time. So let's jump in this together. Welcome to the world of Curious Conversations. Hi, and welcome to Curious Conversations. We are your hosts, Carly and Mandy, and this week we are wrapping up our two-part series on experimental execution, where we have followed the story of Kenneth Smith, who was tried and convicted of murdering Elizabeth Sennett and was placed on death row. After a botched first attempt at lethal injection, Mr. Smith was faced with a backup execution method, which was death by nitrogen hypoxia.
That's right. This episode is heavy and some themes are controversial in nature, which could be disturbing to our listeners. So please be advised.
Well, Mandy, I'm actually really excited to dive into this episode as we plan to talk about a case that we've been watching and just kind of following it as it's unfolded. But before we dive in, so we do want to share this week's curious dish. This is the part of our show where we dish about the most curious thing we've seen this week.
Okay. Well, Carly, before we get into the curious dish, I have to mention that in last week's episode, at one point, I referred to Kenneth Smith by a different first name. And I want to say I'm sorry for any confusion that might have caused. I'll tell you, when you're doing this research and you're just covering all the things, different stories, different people, it's easy to let something slip or mix up in some way. So my apologies, guys. Sorry about that. Anyway, on to the curious dish. I did see something strange, but it was a good strange. I mean, it was a little weird to me, but I was okay. Pleased. You know, usually strange is less like weird, but you know how you're stopped at, you're going down the road and you get to where they've got one lane closed. So they've got the guy there. Usually they look at you as little as they have to. They're just doing their thing. And then they let the traffic go by. So I'm sitting there and I'm waiting for my turn. And so then the guy turns and he's ready for our lane to come. And literally after every person, instead of just like doing the finger up or the wave to, you know, this person and that, he's literally doing hands together like a prayer, like, thank you, thank you. He's doing it on down the line. So every single car, he bows his head and does a thank you.
Oh.
So I'm like waving, like doing the extra wave, like, oh, you're a really nice guy. And I'm watching in my rear view and he's like, every single person's getting the hands together and the head nod. So I don't know if he's doing this like 4 or 5 hours, but it was a little different, but it was one of those things that kind of puts a smile on your face. Like, hey, there's nice people out there.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. Yeah. So next time I come up on that, I'm going to do that.
Right.
Just put hands together and bow at the person and see what happens.
Yep. There you go. I was very thankful that somebody was being nice.
Yeah, that's right.
What
okay,
do you have?
Well, so this week, we have this actually, we bought our tickets for, something that's coming up that is very curious. It mm-hmm. is the Oddities and Curiosities Expo. And I'm so excited to announce that Curious Conversations, we're going to be there. We're going to be on the scene of some curious stuff. So, you know, I did dig through, I looked through the website and, their Facebook page and went through. They're all over the world. They're not just in this area. They travel and they go on tour, and they set up the coolest expos full of stuff that is just random, odd, outside of the normal. Love all of it. I know you're a big fan of this too.
Oh yeah. I'm super excited because, I've always wanted to go to one of these and then, you know, things just haven't worked out. And this one's so large. You know, I'm super excited. I've already been kind of making a wish list But it might be like that thing where you put everything into your Amazon cart and then you take half of it out.
So I've been doing the same thing. I've been digging through and looking at all of the things and thinking that would look so great here. And I could put this on my shelf and this in the window. And yeah, mm-hmm. they've got some really cool jewelry and just, I mean, tons and tons of stuff. And it is all odd. It is not stuff you would normally find, you know, in your local stores, but really cool stuff. And I like that throughout the day, they're going to have some performers on stage. I'm just really excited about it. So look for yes. us to be there. We will definitely be sharing some things coming up and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I am too. I can't wait. So I won't spend too much time on that, but yeah, I'm spending a lot of free time looking at that.
Yep. I'm going ahead and putting aside my little monies.
Me too.
Well, listen, last week we dove into the Kenneth Smith case just hours before his scheduled execution by nitrogen hypoxia. This case really received national attention as this method was just completely untested in the United States. And there was a lot of controversy around that.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it got me, you know, I mean, so many angles and there's just so many ways to look at this. And we talked a lot about that on our first episode. You know, was it ethical? Was it a good decision? And now we're looking at the aftermath and thinking, you know, where do we go from here with capital punishment? You know, like, did it change that for the future?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, let's do a quick recap. Kenneth Smith was sentenced to death, and that was for his role in a 1988 murder for hire. He survived the state's initial attempt to execute him by lethal injection, and that was in 2022. He was scheduled for a second attempt. The U.S. Supreme Court denied his last-minute appeal to halt the execution, and he was executed. His time of death was 8:25 p.m. on January 25th. You know, a lot of people stood beside Smith, and I mean, even protesting up until the moment of his death, you know, for officials to reconsider that. And I think it makes you think through the purpose of capital punishment, the pros and the cons of the death penalty. And I know we're divided on this, you know, as a nation, but mm-hmm. in general, you always have the possibility that you've got the wrong guy, right? You know, many sure. people have been exonerated years after their initial imprisonment due to new evidence. And some of those were sitting on death row, you know, so there's that side of it. You also see the death penalty. It's kind of sometimes used as a political tool, or sometimes it's used as a deterrent to criminal behavior. And on some level, it's used for someone with a high potential to be a repeat offender. So, you know, I don't know that that was the case with Kenneth Smith. I think in this particular case, it was really used as more of a way to provide closure for the sons of the deceased.
Yeah, so you had the Senate family ready for closure, obviously in support of this. And, you know, they had to be ready to move on after all this time. And, you know, the governor, Kay Ivey, you know, just would not grant clemency to allow for life imprisonment, which is a little curious because, I mean, the guy's been in there for over 30 years, you know?
Yeah, you know, and I thought that brought up, you know, something different. There's the expense of capital punishment. So, sure. you know, digging in, I discovered it is extremely expensive. You would think that keeping a person incarcerated for a lifetime would be more expensive, but it's not. And it's shocking, you know, it's much more wear on the taxpayer's wallet to go through the trials that accompany a capital punishment case. So to consider that he had already been living a life of incarceration for 35 years. Then he went through not one, but two execution trials. I mean, just wow.
I know. And so, you know, that's a whole other thing to look at is just how long he was there and how that works and all with the system. But, you know, you got the other side. So I mean, the United Nations were really concerned about the cruel or inhumane treatment here. And Smith's lawyers, they argued that it was unconstitutional, and yet it happened. It all went through in the end. So I'm wondering, you know, where are the, what's the parameters there? How is that decided on what will be passed in the future? Do we just, you know, try something out that's been talked about and then, you know, decide if we want to keep that or not? You know, I don't know how many more things might come up in the future for options.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And, you know, there was a lot of concern over the method of execution. I think that was probably the biggest thing in this case. And I don't know that we have a lot of closure after this. You know, it was thought that it would either go so horribly that it wouldn't be considered again, or that it would be such a seamless process that it would be like a welcomed mode of ending a life. But honestly, neither of those were actually the case.
So we talked in the last episode about that final walk. You know, we're looking at all these parts of it and going over all the stuff about the death cell, the gas mask, essentially. So let's talk about the day of. So he had his last meal. It's like 8 hours before. And Kenneth Smith chose steak, hash browns, and eggs. So that's always been strange to me. You know, we talked on part one about the and of things and the but of things, which has no context. Right this second, people say, what are you talking about, the and the but? But it was basically, in short, how we can fill one thing and another thing instead of filling one thing but another thing. And, you know, I think we are a society of that. You know, here we are. We're set to execute. Even though it failed, we're going to try it again. And, you know, one more time. And yet we offer this meal. And it's like, you know, choose your own meal. And it's almost like a tribute or something, like respect.
Yeah, I've never really understood the last meal thing. Who's right. able to enjoy a meal hours before they're to be put to death? I don't know. I don't eat for 2 days when I have to go to the dentist for a checkup. Like, right. nerves kill my appetite. So I don't know. You know, I did look into the origin and got some varying results on that. I mean, everything from a fear of being haunted by a hungry spirit. One made me laugh a little. Yes. Yeah. I mean, isn't that crazy?
Yes.
all the way to, you know, something out of Greece that was offered to gladiators as like a, hey, you know, here we go. Take your last meal and go have at it. And then there's opinions that it emulates Jesus sharing his last meal with the disciples. Ultimately, I guess, representing like communal atonement for the community and the prisoner. I don't know. It's all over the place.
First gut reaction to that is, you know, there's just a whole lot of reasoning for feeling guilty.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Texas doesn't offer that anymore. Maybe they don't feel so guilty. I don't know. But I guess they sort of took a look at it and didn't really see the point any longer, you know, I guess because it is such an old tradition. But some of them said the inmates would just go too far. Like there was this one, Lawrence Brewer, and so his last request was so extravagant that it seemed almost like a mockery. And you wonder if some of them might do that, you know? So here, this guy orders two steaks, a triple meat cheeseburger, a cheese omelet, a large bowl of fried okra, three fajitas, and a pot of ice cream, and a pound of barbecue meat.
Oh, my. Yeah, I think he was wanting to leave something behind after he was
right. No joke.
So Allstate's don't offer a last meal. And a lot of those that do, I mean, they have learned to set some limits, you know, everything from there's a budget. I think in Florida, it's $40, you know, that you can spend. Okay. But also they've decided that, you know, items must be locally available, things like that.
Yeah. They don't cook it up right there, you know? So, they say the most popular food types are fried foods, you know, like salt and sugar type stuff. You know, and I'm thinking, yeah, just get it all in. But get this, though, they can't have bubble gum.
No bubble gum, huh?
No bubble gum.
Okay. Well, you know, I can see fried foods being popular, like maybe a big greasy drive-through burger and fries. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to worry about your health anymore. So, I mean, why not, I guess? I can only imagine how many like Burger King employees have unknowingly put together a Whopper to be taken to someone as their last meal.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I didn't even think about that. So, you know, on part one of this series, we went dark with a question about choosing your own mode of execution. So I say this time, I can't help but think, if I'm in that situation, what would I order?
Ooh, okay. Yep. Well, I feel like this is much easier for us, knowing that there's not much of a chance that we're actually picking out our last meal, but...
No, I hope not.
Let me think. So I would probably, honestly, I'm going to order a big fat steak. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Probably some sides, but I want my sides to be homemade. Oh, okay. So my meemaw used to make a cake. It was a yellow cake with all these little teeny tiny layers. I don't even know how she cut a cake like that. But it had chocolate icing, but this icing had been cooked. So it was like warm when you poured it on there, but it still had like the sugar grit in it.
Yes, I mean, like a fudge.
Yes, it was to die for, and that's no pun intended.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, it's supposed to be like this reminder of home. You know, you're talking about that, and I'm thinking, yeah, you know, you want that. And it's really sad if you think about that, that's what they're doing, like one last visit. And so for me, I'm probably thinking of like all the Southern foods and everything, and like something my family would have made, like, you know, grandparents or whatever. And it brings like one of the saddest stories to mind for me. You know, we mentioned the Twilight Zone on the last episode, and this was one of those, but it was a short story first. It's Ambrose Bierce, and it's called An Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. Do you know that story?
No, I've heard of it, but I'm not familiar.
Okay. So it's really sad, but impactful short story. They did a really good, it was actually set aside as a special Twilight Zone. They came out and did a little thing about it beforehand. And anyway, it's very moving the way they play that out, that fits the original short story. And so you got to look it up and watch. I don't want to ruin it for you, but it's under an hour. So it's not a huge commitment, but it's about a botched, hanging. So I'm just going to leave that for you to check out.
All right. I'm going to do it. Wow.
Okay. So, all right. They say, we're talking about all this food and people going overboard, but they say some inmates are not even wanting that last meal. Like you're talking about your nerves and how you can't eat or something, but they're saying here that it might be that, but they think that the inmates are just sort of over that whole structure of it. And, you know, it's almost like an expectation, you know, like feeding the livestock before you push them through the door. Did it go too dark there?
Well, you know what? It is dark.
It is.
Yeah. Well, so Smith had his last meal. Many were rallying for him to be excused. His appeal was denied. His sentence was carried out. And as I mentioned earlier, it was as pretty as I think the state of Alabama hoped it would be, or rather as pretty as they boldly stated to media afterwards.
So you're wondering, you know, how much of that is appearance, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So did he struggle? The argument beforehand was he'll lose consciousness in seconds, but it took a bit.
Yeah. You know, the entire process took much longer than originally anticipated. And he said to have been conscious for several torturous minutes. I mean, there was convulsing, the agonal breathing, really fighting against the restraints. And, you know, the curtain closed before his announced time of death. So there was time that was unseen by family and media.
And, you know, we said this several times in the first one, and I'll say it again, no matter how you feel about this, and not taking either side here, I'm just saying, you know, they had this plan. They wanted to be backed by this plan. They wanted it to go a certain way. And could you really see them coming out afterwards and saying, you know what, I think maybe we messed up here. It didn't go as we thought it would.
Right.
Yeah. So he was quoted to have given his last statement as, "Tonight, Alabama causes humanity to take a step backwards. Thank you for supporting me. Love all of you."
Wow.
Yeah. I'm thinking of what all I would say. I'm kind of hard to hush up anyway, but I think I would be, grasping and trying to get it all out there and make all these points, get that last stuff said.
Right.
But anyway, the people did. A lot of them, they did support him. And certainly some were against this new way of execution, especially whether they, whatever they thought about him. So how's it received in the media now that this has been used? What do you think they're saying now?
We have three states, Alabama, Mississippi, and Oklahoma. They have approved nitrogen gas as a form of execution. And now Ohio lawmakers have announced a bill and that would allow nitrogen to be used in their state. So this is something that I feel could spread among states who have many sitting on death row. And there's a lack of access to certain drugs that are used for lethal injection. So this is companies either stop making them or, they don't want their products used to kill people. So then prisons are left kind of experimenting with these different compounds, one of those being nitrogen, because it's easy to attain and it's less expensive to manufacture. But I don't know how the general media feels, probably very conflicted and probably sure. Pretty polarized, as many things are. It was weird to watch the narrative unfold through Kenneth Smith's case and then how it was handled by media. So I know you and I felt conflicted. There mm-hmm. are definitely sure. some feelings there because there's so many different aspects and parts to it. It's not just about Kenneth. It's not just about Elizabeth. It's not just about nitrogen. There's a whole lot. But if you stood, and when I say you, I mean the media in general, but if you stood for Smith, you were standing against the Sennett family, but if you stood by the method of execution, you were inhumane and supported misappropriation of science and scientific testing right. on the backs of inmates. It was just all over the place.
Yeah, I know. And it's, that's just why we wanted to kind of cover, get a whole overview of that because I know they were like, they were talking like the movements and the shaking for one thing was involuntary. I did hear that. Some still thought it was, was humane, that it did work out. I mean, Kay Ivey, she basically said it was closure for the family. I didn't hear her comment directly on that, that there was the shaking and all. But, she's saying it's closure. But did you know that the family had already forgiven Kenneth Smith years ago?
Right.
Along with the others, because, it was their dad. I mean, that's a pretty big part of the whole thing.
Yeah. But I did find the interview with Michael Sennett to be a little confusing. He stated mm-hmm. that they had forgiven all three people involved in the case. Those were his words. But there mm-hmm. were four people involved. You've got the Reverend Charles Sennett Sr. He hired a gentleman named Billy Williams to murder Elizabeth. Williams then co-contracted Kenneth Smith and John Forrest Parker. Those two gentlemen were to assist him in that. And, the Reverend took his own life before even being officially questioned. I think he sat down with his sons, I believe I read, and, just told them what had happened. And then he took his life behind the building. I believe it was church. Parker was executed in 2010. Williams died in prison in 2020, and that was just of illnesses. But mm-hmm. then now we've got Smith in 2024. It made me curious, who was left out of that pardon? And my assumption would be the father. Maybe that was put to rest so long ago that he only considers the other three men to be part of the equation. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he doesn't forgive his dad or maybe, like you say, that's been done. This is a long time, and that's really the worst part of it, in my opinion, was the dad. I'm just thinking, how do you, they don't get to do those questions. They don't get to have that closure with him to say, what in the world and what were you thinking and why did you do this and all that. So I'm sure you talk about a mix of emotion there.
Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, so now that it is all done, so to speak, his body's been sent for an autopsy, and you know, maybe that'll shed some light on the truth of how well this thing went. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I don't know that an autopsy will really shed any light. I think, honestly, the state of Alabama claims that this went beautifully. It was just perfect. Witnesses say that is simply not truth. And honestly, without video evidence, I feel the general public's just not ever going to know.
Right. I know one of his, Smith's concerns was that this would become a regular thing. And he said that. So, you know, we talked about Ohio already talking about it, and who knows how many are going to get on board with this.
Yeah. And which may not be the problem. You know, I think the main concern was the fact that a life was taken using a method that was not tested. So, you know, there's no protocol for that. There's not equipment used that's been regulated for that specific purpose.
Yeah, so we talked last time about the whole use of nitrogen hypoxia for assisted suicide. And, well, you know, they've done that here essentially. You know, it's not considered toxic. It's the properties that literally make you unable to breathe. So You're doing this yourself. I mean, in the world of assisted suicide, which is another dark tunnel to go down, but this is likened to pneumonia in older people. You know, it's making you not able to get a breath. It's asphyxiation.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, like you said, that's a whole dark conversation in itself. But Dr. Nitschke, who works in Alabama and Australia, has been assisting suicide using nitrogen pods, and it is asphyxiation. And then you got to think about, you know, the aftermath of that. So what happens to a person after their execution?
Right. So, okay. So once the person is deceased, they're no longer part of the institution, which, you know, makes sense. I mean, they're gone, but they're considered free, quote unquote, then. So that there's freedom in that, at least, I guess, depending on how you look at it. But their sentence is over, and so their body is released to the family. And now, if the family can't make arrangements or whatever, there is no family, then the prison will arrange for, like, indigent care, and the body's laid to rest by the prison staff. They might even speak at the gravesite, and sometimes trusted prisoners are there. It's a whole thing, but, you know, if it's if the family's able to come get the body, then they do that. And so at home in prison, the body is said to be placed in a coroner's van. And so it makes a lap, like, around the perimeter road of the prison, so that the inmates can sort of say goodbye, because, you know, they're all in lockdown during the execution. So I'm picturing this. This is a little bit weird. It's more of that, like, last meal kind of stuff. But anyway, if the body is not claimed, then it's going to be placed in a coffin that's made by the inmates and buried on the prison grounds. It's just like this whole ceremony, this whole process, and everyone's really involved, which is, I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's got to be strange. I mean, to imagine those that are on death row and then to watch, you know, this person be taken around as a final goodbye. And that's gotta be a lot. That's gotta weigh heavy and make you rethink some things. And then, you know, is there some peace when a family is able to take that person home, or is it, you know, I'm taking home my loved one, or I'm taking home a dead body. You know, I don't know. I don't know what that would feel like, to not really have those moments of goodbye. I would liken that to, you know, someone who loses someone so quickly that you don't get to say your goodbyes. You know, you've got that person locked up. You're not reaching out and touching that person one more time. And so all of that, it's just a really heavy subject.
It is heavy. And, you know, I think it would be interesting to interview someone who works the prison, because, you know, this is a singular the situation, but you look at somebody who, this is their daily life. This is where they work. This is where they spend their time. And I'm thinking, you know, from what I've read, they're trying to look at it just as a job, and their job is to protect the prisoner and not take sides. But they're seeing this, they're having got to have their own opinions on it. And literally, they just got to go through and just walk through the process day by day. So, well, I guess in closing, Austin Sarah, I'm not quite sure to say how to say the name, but I know he's the political scientist that wrote the book. I don't know if you've heard of this, Gruesome Spectacles. It's Botched Executions and America's Death Penalty. Do you know that book?
No, but that sounds interesting.
Yeah, I think that's going to have to be on my list, my ongoing list of reads. But so he said, with each development in the technology of execution, the same promises have been made that each new technology was safe, reliable, effective, and humane. And those claims have not generally been fulfilled. And I think that's the bottom line.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, this has been a heavy episode, series, but we want to thank you guys, our listeners, for joining us and for sticking with us in this heavy mess. You know, we definitely try to present both sides and kind of our thoughts and feelings on both sides and make sure that it's even, and it's up to you to decide how you feel. So yeah, we're grateful that you've stuck with us through this. We definitely have a lot more coming up on some future episodes. I know we're all over the place. We're light, we're dark, we're heavy, we're not, but we like it that way. So we hope that you'll come back and join us. There's a lot that you're not going to want to miss.
Well, listen, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, where we post exclusive content, contests, and so much more. And of course, you can keep up with our episodes through Podbean or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And as always, if you have a story that sparks curiosity or you have something that you want us to talk about, just shoot us an email to ourcuriouspodcast@gmail.com. We'll see you next time.